You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to a special edition of the Hagmann, or the Doug Hagmann Rescue Hour for today. That's right, I almost got that wrong out of the gate. It's Thursday, October 12th, 2018. Coming at you at a different time. My program actually was preempted. I joined Keith Hansen this morning, WNTK, during the 9 o'clock hour. So this program is coming to you at a different time, and I apologize for that. Of course, yesterday, the flagship show, Hagmann Report, was preempted, or actually dark, because of our coverage, our coverage. And I'll explain that in a minute, of the Donald Trump rally in our hometown, Erie, Pennsylvania. And more specifically, our investigative reporting, as it will be revealed, of the infrastructure that is pushing back against the conservative base. It's no secret that we have conducted investigations, multiple investigations, and are currently conducting a pretty extensive investigation into the infrastructure of power that is attempting to unseat President Donald Trump. Now, many reporters and many pundits will talk about what is known as the deep state, what is known as the criminal element, or the permanent state within the bureaucracy. We're actually going out and attempting to identify those people from the ground level up, and sometimes that's what you've got to do. You've got to go from the ground level, from the person on the street, and follow the money upward, follow the instructions upward. And we talked about that a little bit on Keith Hansen, and I talked about that a little bit on during his show. And I'm going to tell you right now, man, I got so much on my mind. It's day 630 of the Donald Trump presidency. Why do I make that an issue every program? Well, because we're looking at a process of draining the swamp. It's a slow, painfully slow, painstaking process. And of course, there is the optics from the other side, which would have you believe that it's not taking place at all. In fact, they're winning. And even some conservatives or some people on the right are just looking at this and saying, man, why aren't Hillary Clinton and Obama and others locked up already? Because it's obvious that, at least with respect to Hillary Clinton, the felonies in which she has been alleged to be involved involved. Of course, from the emails, just the emails alone, her testimony before various congressional committees, and on and on. Why? What's taking so long? And there's frustration across the board. And I will tell you this. The left right now, they are capitalizing on that painful process. I don't know how specifically to really articulate this in a manner that it needs to be, except to say that the longer that it goes where we don't see the Hillary Clintons or the Loretta Lynch's and others, Susan Rice, Cheryl Mills, even at the lower level, like the IT people, Brian Pagliano, or others, the longer it goes that we don't see them locked up, the more the left is saying, see, they didn't do anything wrong. You spent X amount of months on an investigation, and you can't find anything. Well, that's not the case. Unfortunately, I've said this before, we are playing by the rules, by a very specific set of rules governed by the Constitution. And there's a presumption of innocence until proven guilty. However, when you've got a weaponized FBI in favor of Clinton and they conduct a sham of an investigation, as we saw under Comey, do you expect, when an investigation has been contaminated, do you really expect being able to take a contaminated investigation, contaminated by Comey, contaminated by others within the Department of Justice, and rehabilitate that contaminated investigation into a legitimate investigation that goes forward? identifies not just the people such as Clinton and others as the perpetrators of criminal activity, but also the individuals conducting the investigation at that time. Having been in investigations for as long as I have, it's a very difficult job at best, and I don't think people are looking at it that way. So there's not only are we starting from behind the 20-yard line, to use a football metaphor, we're starting in the end zone. We're starting in the stands, trying to move the ball forward because of investigation contamination. The investigation conducted by the Department of Justice and the FBI of Hillary Clinton was deliberately moved sideways. It was deliberately contaminated. So when you have a return to lawfulness, when you have a return to a Department of Justice, and we're not there yet, but when that returns and the tables are turned and you begin to look at not just the perpetrators, but the investigators of the perpetrators, the investigators who contaminated the crime scene. In fact, that might be a good analogy. The investigators investigating the perpetrators contaminated the crime scene. And if we play by the rules, how can you take the evidence secured from a contaminated crime scene and just walk into a courtroom and say, or walk into a prosecutor and say, hey, look, here is the evidence. It can be done. But again, you're moving the ball down the field from a position. Well, hey, I'll even go even further. You're not even in the stands. You're outside of the arena. So it takes that much longer. If you look at this logically, it takes that much longer for the wheels of justice to be not just set in motion, but to be repaired. And that's what we're doing. So consider 8 years and even longer, but just look at 8 years under the Obama regime, the weaponization, the making political of the premier law enforcement agency in the United States, the FBI, politicizing that entity, and then subsequent to that, weaponizing that against your political opponent, Donald Trump. And all of that, everything that happened, it's a contamination of the crime scene. So you've got this already biased premier law enforcement agency politicized at the very top and using investigators from the top to handle things like the servers and things like, well, I'll even go into, that's sufficient, but things like the servers and Hillary Clinton's emails. When you've got bad cops on the force and making way for the criminal, and then all of a sudden you do some house cleaning, you bring in some good cops or even some outside investigators, how do you treat the evidence that was handled during the initial investigation, which has already been contaminated? That's where we stand today. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but we are playing from a position not on the 20, not behind the goal line, not in the stands, but from a position outside of the playing arena. That's where we're at, and that's why this is taking so painstakingly long. The reason I bring this up, and I witnessed this firsthand yesterday, and of course, as I mentioned, the Hagman Report was dark yesterday because we did not just attend, and some things went sideways yesterday with our ability to get inside the, or be with the media. And I so apologize for that, but I think that was my fault with respect to some paperwork and stuff. But that aside, what we did was we looked at the, we were present, and we looked at the crowd at the rally in Erie, Pennsylvania. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, the president came to Erie, Pennsylvania, our home city, to support the individuals who are running the people who are running during the midterms, such as Lou Barletta for the Senate race, Mike Kelly, and so on. But he came here in support of those candidates who are running against the incumbent Democrats, in the case of Barletta versus Casey. And Casey, of course, has name recognition here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But aside from that, here's the reason I'm mentioning this. There was published in the New York Times an article, an opinion piece, titled "Trump's Contradiction, Assailing Left-Wing Mob as Crowd Chants Lock Her Up." Now, think about this. And the byline here, or the dateline, is from Erie, Pennsylvania. And that, of course, was from yesterday, October 10th. And this article is dated October 10th. And again, it's in the New York Times, White House memo. "Trump's Contradiction, Assailing Left-Wing Mob as Crowd Chants Lock Her Up." Now, this piece goes on to say, when President Trump mocked, okay, now incendiary language, mocked a Democratic senator at a midterm election rally the other night, the crowd responded with one of his supporters' favorite chants from his own campaign 2 years ago, "Lock her up, lock her up." Well, this is in reference, by the way, to Dianne Feinstein in this context, but okay, that's kind of an aside here. Notes the Washington or New York Times piece. The arena boomed with shouting voices, and they kept going, "Lock her up, lock her up, lock her up." And the piece says Mr. Trump smiled and soaked it in. Then he assailed Democrats for becoming an angry left-wing mob. Okay, now that's the opening salvo of this New York Times piece. The reason I bring this up, I'm exposing the tactics of the lunatic lobotomized left. Now, the lunatic lobotomized left, in my professional assessment, that's not the Barack Obamas, that's not the Eric Holders, or that's not at that level. We're talking about the cannon fodder at the street level, who are saying, well, Donald Trump is such a bad president because, look, he's stirring the masses against us. We have to fight back. And, of course, the left, having no moral compass, having no rules, not playing by any rules. The right is the target. The conservatives are the target of this left angry mob, which the New York Times says, no, it's the right, which is an angry mob, as evidenced by or illustrated by the chants, "Lock her up." Now, follow me in this, please, because I think this is extremely important in the scheme of things, in the big picture of things. The fact, well, let me go back. I know you guys hate when I do that. Let me just lay the groundwork for you. Because this is pretty much the same as I have learned personally, as we have learned as an investigative agency. This is pretty much the template for what is taking place all across America. The events in Erie yesterday represent insight into every other rally or well, I'll just say rally across the United States, given by Donald Trump. Yesterday, and I can speak to this, and I'm speaking to this now not as a talk show host, but as an investigator. Yesterday, at the arena that holds about, oh, I don't know, roughly 8,000, well, 7,800, I believe, is the capacity. People to attend yesterday's rally began lining up right about 4 o'clock yesterday morning, even earlier, based on my best assessment from speaking with people there. The first-hand knowledge that I've got that I can say with absolutely certainty, I could swear in a court of law, the first person that was there got there right around 4 a.m., maybe a little bit earlier, maybe a little bit later, but approximately 4 a.m. Now, I heard from others that there were people that were there from the previous night. I did not speak with them. I can't speak to that. But let's just go with the 4 o'clock in the morning time for a 6 p.m. rally, scheduled rally. Okay. At this venue that holds 7,800 people approximately, there right around 10,000 people showed up for this event. And that's by a combination of open source information as well as my own personal observation, as well as talking with certain individuals there with security for the venue. All right, so you've got about 10,000 people pro-Donald Trump. How many of them from this area? And again, this is just based on speaking to a cross-section of, a couple of dozen people there. Most of the individuals at this rally were from the district, the congressional district of Mike Kelly, which is our representative, which happens to be a pivot county, part of the pivot county in Pennsylvania for Barletta. Now, this is not, I'm not speaking strictly politics here. I'm giving you some inside insight into what's taking place tactically by the left. That's where this is going. But ultimately, but all of these things are combining with each other, and they're creating this perfect storm. But let me get back to the event yesterday. So by mid-afternoon, I'll say this, you had a line of people going through this snake-like maze in front of the venue, all around the block. I mean, several blocks long. And I would guess, just from a reasonable guess, you probably had 4,000 people in line by early afternoon. By mid-afternoon, you could probably, you would fill the arena. And then the overflow. So by the time the president arrived and began speaking, you had pretty close to 8,000 when you consider the standing room on the floor, pretty close to 8,000 people inside the arena. And I would say another 1,000 outside of the arena watching on a large screen, huge screen, in front and around the arena. So, okay. Then, now let's talk about the leftist tactics, the protesters. Interestingly, in our city, you've got this was very well handled. The protesters were confined to an area about a block, maybe a little bit more away from the actual event. The protection was, the security was just absolute. I can't say enough good about the security there. And the security the professionals had done to keep the crowds and our president safe, and our representatives and such. But let's talk about the protesters now. Again, with that in mind, with 10,000 attendees, mostly from this congressional district, they didn't have to be bussed in or flown in or anything like that. Now let's talk about the protesters, because this is where it all kind of ties together and speaks to the New York Times hit piece on President Trump. The protesters, they numbered roughly, by my estimate, and Joe would, who really got into the investigative mode, by his estimate, comparing notes, about 100, under 100 perhaps. 100 might be stretching it. There were several with manufactured signs in support of Planned Parenthood and other specific causes. Now, earlier, in fact, about 24 hours before the event, one ad in particular appeared on Craigslist, and I will actually read what this ad was, or what this ad stated. We need numerous people to stand in line to get into Trump rally. $100 per person, Wednesday, October 10th only, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Meet at front of the line to get inside for Trump rally. Call or text me with questions to confirm. Now, there were two different ads. That was one, and there was another one very similar in terms of the wording. And there was a phone number associated with this. In fact, the phone number was traced to a number around Indianapolis. And that phone belonged to somebody, or that ad was placed by somebody by the name of Mike. Okay. Now, if you read that ad, essentially what this guy was saying, what this Mike was saying, hey, I'll give you $100 to stand in line for the Trump rally. It certainly didn't suggest any kind of protest or anything like that. It was just line standers. And as a matter of fact, line standers needed was the headline or was the subject line of the Craigslist ad. Line standers needed for Trump rally on Wednesday, October 10th. Now, if someone looked at that, what would you believe? Donald Trump paying or the campaign, or I shouldn't say campaign, the administration paying people to stand in line? And that certainly reads that way. But that's not the case at all. Because when you called that number or sent a text to that number, and I'm not going to give the number out, our investigation is continuing because that I believe the name was correct, but I also believe that was a burner phone, if you will. But I think that enough information was gathered during the initial part of the investigation where we can identify the employer or the handler of this individual. But having said all of that, no, that $100 or that ad was for people to protest. So let's take it another step here. And by the way, yes, we did make contact. Yes, we did find some information out about this. As a matter of fact, that investigation is ongoing, so I really don't want to speak to it now, except to say that this traces back. This has some pretty interesting tentacles back into really the Obama apparatus of political activism. That the monetary, the money ties, because somebody is funding, or multiple entities are funding this protest, this pushback. And you might think, okay, well, this is really all kind of, that's all well and good, but it's really nothing. It's really, you're just wasting my time talking about this. No, because this identifies a larger apparatus, organization, built into, well, it goes to the highest levels of government, even today's government, through the various PACs, the lobby groups, through the various former administration officials, the community organizing groups. So we are slowly identifying the people who are actually the cannon fodder, the people on the ground, the grassroots, in air quotes, those people. Again, the cannon fodder, the lobotomized liberals who will take a sign for $100 and stand there and chant, and attempt to be noticed, attempt to be part of something. Now, of the people that were there, I would say maybe less than 4%, 5%. My math is a little bit, I'm going to say less than 5% were actually paid. And the people who were getting paid were the people who were organizing the protesters. Does that make sense? In other words, it wasn't the sign holders. It was the people who were organizing the people to hold the signs, which sounds really weird, but I'll just say it like that, because again, there's more information yet to be developed from this, and I don't want to compromise the integrity of our investigation based on what I'm saying now. So you've got this non-grassroots activist campaign against Donald Trump and against the Donald Trump supporters, which is important to add here. The graphic that I spoke about yesterday or the day before that I sent on my personal Twitter account, at HagmanPI, by the way, is the fact that it was a picture of Donald Trump sitting in a chair pointing his finger saying, they're really not coming after me. They're coming after you. I'm just in the way. That's what this is all about. Taking us, the conservative constitutional element, hitting against us, taking us out of the picture. That's what's important, because we see this. We see this with Twitter and Facebook. The targets are not Donald Trump necessarily. That's what the ultimate target is. But the people who are being banned on social networking, that's you and I. Those are the conservatives. The people who dare to speak their mind, they're conservatives, and push the or promote the conservative constitutional ideology. It's against us. So looking at this in a larger sense, you've got the 10,000 plus people in, and I'm just putting this in Erie as the template for every other city across the United States, 10,000 plus, and the numbers would change, of course, according to venue and according to location and such, but the tactics, the plans, the playbook is the same, 10,000 plus. And you've got this organization or this infrastructure that Obama, at least in its latest iteration, has built to stifle or attempt to stifle the agenda to make America great again, or Donald Trump's agenda. But they're doing it while coming after Trump, while aiming at Donald Trump. They're hitting at the conservatives who support him. Hopefully that makes sense. And in some cases, they're actually lowering the sights of their weapons, metaphorically speaking, at us. And we see that play out when we get banned off of social networking sites like Twitter and Facebook. Then we see, as I mentioned, this op-ed piece or this hit piece in the New York Times saying, well, wait a minute, it's Donald Trump who's doing the division or dividing. It's Donald Trump who is actually creating the mobs to be violent against people like Dianne Feinstein and people like Hillary Clinton, because, of course, lock her up. That was the chant from 2016 with respect to Hillary Clinton. Now it's the chant against Feinstein, as well as Hillary Clinton and others. But when you look at this and consider this, lock her up is a cry for justice, isn't it? It's a cry for lawlessness. Or lawfulness, I'm sorry. It's a cry to be lawful and to be adherent to the Constitution and to be adherent to the rule of law. We're not saying lynch her up. We're saying lock her up. Presumably, and I would stick my neck out here and say absolutely after a fair trial or after a trial to answer charges of the criminal acts in which they collectively and individually have, in which they've been engaged. So there's a distinct difference between lock her up and lynch her up, basically. The left is attempting to conflate, to mix up, to show that we are saying, no, wait a minute, no, we should go after the left, which is totally untrue. And this is important because the subtle differences, subtle in terms only of reading the words or the words on the printed word, they're subtle, but they're extremely, the difference there is extremely big. Because the left is saying, okay, this is why when they go low, referring to Holder now, referring to his statement recently, when they go low, we kick them. This is a reactive response to lock her up. Whereas we are talking about enforcing the rule of law against the alleged perpetrators, he is talking and promoting, as are others, promoting a violent reaction. And this is the playing field in which we find ourselves today. So while we are saying lock her up, or we're saying follow the rule of law, that rule of law, if it were a crime scene, has been very contaminated, as well as the investigators working that crime scene had done the contamination. And we have to go in and fix it, not just fix it to the best of our ability, and not just remove the investigators who broke the law, contaminated the crime scene, but to prosecute them as well. But we've got to get them out first. And that process has been painstakingly slow, and that has caused many people to kick the wall, kick their file cabinets. I know, I've done it. Or just become frustrated and throw their hands up and say, oh, screw it. It's not going to happen. You are never going to see anyone perp walked. You've been there. You know what I'm talking about. And the left, the media specifically, is exploiting that frustration, as illustrated by this specific New York Times piece that says Trump's contradiction. Well, there's no contradiction at all. It's a false premise. There's no contradiction. We are calling for the restoration of the rule of law. We are counting for people who have broken the law to be accountable. They are calling for people to kill us. You might think, well, that's hyperbole. Really? What happened with Steve Scalise in that baseball shooting? Do you think that was just somebody woke up one day without any prompting and says, this is what I'm going to do? No. But the media hasn't talked about that since when? Since it happened. And they won't talk about that. Yet, on the other side, and pay really close attention, because I am personally involved in this. On the other side, they'll say, wait a minute. You're talking about Pizzagate, for example. You're talking about Pizzagate. So because of your words, some guy picks up a rifle, goes into a pizza shop, and puts a bullet in the wall. And you, Doug Hagmann, or you, okay, Alex Jones, or you, whoever, you're responsible for that happening. So the very people on the left who are saying that are denying responsibility for what they're saying, for the Holder statements, and even worse, saying, well, wait, no, it's Donald Trump. It's actually Donald Trump who's riling up the masses and trying to cause violence in the streets. Do you see where I'm going with this? Do you see the difference? And then you've got the media backing up this false premise in the form of the New York Times opinion piece. It's just wrong on so many levels. Now, just hold that thought for a second, because I'm going to tie all this up. You've got criminality. You've got lawlessness. You've got people ostensibly getting away with crimes, such as Hillary Clinton, as I mentioned. Eric Holder, the guy who did say, you know, when they go low, we kick them. The only attorney general to be charged with contempt of Congress. But where's all this coming from? How was the stage set for where we're at today? How was the crime scene contaminated? Why? And why are we not seeing any kind of forward movement, at least not by our own eyes, any forward movement in the justice system? All right, let me take you back. Consider that when Obama won his Senate seat back in 2004, 43 years old, law professor, making $85,000 a year. By the time he left the White House, by the time he left the White House in 2017, I'll just go right to that number. He was worth an estimated $20 million. Now consider that. 2004, he's making $85,000 a year. By the time he left the White House, some 13 years later, in 2017, he was worth an estimated $20 million. This all ties together. Hang on. Three-fourths of that. Now, this according to a review of 16 years of his tax returns, financial records by Forbes magazine, for example. That came from, or three-fourths came, 75% came from book deals. Just $3.7 million came from the government salaries. All right, now, what about Michelle Obama? She was vice president for community and external affairs at University of Chicago Hospitals. Back in 2005, she earned $317,000. In 2006, her salary dropped to $274,000. But her personal income tapered off during Obama's presidential campaign. This according, again, to Forbes. Then came the big money. When the Clintons left the White House in 2005, consider this. Hillary claimed that they were dead broke. But since then, they've taken in more than $240 million, mainly from high-paid speeches and book deals. Now, when you consider that, use that as kind of a barometer of things, and with the aid of their billionaire supporters, consider people like Tom Steyer and others, you know, George Soros, obviously, the Obamas, post-presidency, third term, if you will, would have the same opportunity to make much more money. And Peter Schweizer wrote a book, in his books, of course, money is a big part of the game in Washington politics. And for many, serving in Congress is the best job they'll ever get. It's not that necessarily, it's not the salary, but it's the power that comes with the salary. Because besides the income, they're rewarded with power and responsibility. But increasingly, the congressional members are leveraging that power and responsibility to create wealth. Under the crony capitalism system, access to government officials who can dole out grants and special tax breaks and subsidies and so on. And it's just not Congress. There's much wealth our legislators can accumulate while in office. Those at the top of the food chains, they're doing much better. And, of course, you can consider this against the backdrop of Tammany Hall and more than 100 years ago. The manipulation of government monies by corrupt politicians, it's been a fact of life forever. But in this case, it's a little bit more refined. Now, what does that have to do with the present day? As you go through, for example, you might want to pick up a copy of Stephen Strang's book, Trump Aftershock, because he gets into detail on this. But consider the environment, and I'm not going to go through, I've got a ton of notes here. I'm not going to go through all of the ways that the communist socialists are using money, exploiting the divides and such, or using money and the processes, I should say, of funneling that money into movements against the current government. But that's the backdrop. That's the bigger picture. Now let's fast forward to 2016. Again, notice the money being made by former administration, Obama and Clinton's. Now, in the weeks after Donald Trump's win, there were people within the inner circles, and I'm struggling to explain this from my notes, but people within the inner circles of Obama, they've suddenly realized that, hey, we lost. And those who were the closest to Obama over that 8-year period couldn't let loose of the feeling that this was not how the script was meant to play out. This wasn't how the Obama years were supposed to end. There was a guy by the name of Jason Zegler, Zingerly, I think is how you pronounce it. He's a political correspondent. He pointed out in January, in fact, it was January 17th, 2017, in an article for GQ magazine, which I accessed here, this wasn't going to be the end. Instead, it was going to be the beginning of Obama's third term. Now, consider ever since, forever pretty much, if a president lost an election, that president stayed out of politics after he left office. You've got examples, most modern examples, including Eisenhower, Johnson, Nixon, Ford. Now, Jimmy Carter, he went off with Habitat for Humanity, built houses and such, but he largely kept his mouth shut. Reagan, both Bushes, Bill Clinton even, they stayed out of the political limelight. And much like all other executives who wrapped up their particular season on the nation's biggest stage within the largest global arena and the American arena. Well, what did Obama do? Look at this. In that article, specific to that article, Obama, well, for the first time, now this was an Obama, a former advisor to Obama, Dan Pfeiffer. He was quoted by Zingerly, as this. For the first time in 8 years, as Obama seeks to comfort Americans going through a traumatic event, the trauma, he knows in the back of his mind that his life is also changed. This time, It's not a town in Oklahoma flattened by a tornado. It's him, meaning Obama and his legacy. Now, Pfeiffer said that the Obama legacy could have continued for generations if only the Democrats won three in a row. Everyone in that Obama circle believed in a Clinton win that would guarantee Obama's legacy. It would solidify that legacy. Then he added, some of the battles that would have been settled with a Clinton win will now continue for the next 4 to 20 years. Now consider that, because I'm addressing the ideology behind everything you're seeing today. So the entire apple cart was upset by the win of the unexpected win by Donald Trump. And this is why you get Keith Hansen and others say it was that win that would really, the unexpected win come from behind, nobody expected. The only thing that that Donald Trump is guilty of is winning an election. And I'm not sure who to attribute that statement to. But I mentioned on Keith Hansen's show today, Bill Moyers. And again, Stephen Strang points this out in his book, Trump Aftershock. Bill Moyers, consider this now, because this will speak to what we're seeing on the streets today. Bill Moyers, PBS commentator, former press secretary for Lyndon Johnson. He was interviewed by Stephen Strang, actually. But anyway, he said this. Moyers was so distressed by Hillary Clinton's loss that, along with his writer, Michael Winship, he drafted an inaugural address for Hillary Clinton, for the defeated candidate, to announce the unveiling of a new shadow government to counter and undermine the Donald Trump presidency. Now, you might think that this is just an exercise in futility. But what Moyers was proposing was a radical movement drawn from the legions of angry and humiliated Obama supporters who found themselves suddenly without a country. And the aim was to track every plan and proposal of the Trump administration to raise alarms and, more importantly, in my view, dissent, and then to gum up the works and take direct action as needed to defeat the Trump agenda at every turn. Every proposal, every executive action, every move, every statement would have to be challenged, regardless of the damage it would do to our nation. Remember, the Democrats, the Democratic left, the Democratic socialists, the communists, that party, they will do anything. Instead of us having the House, you know, and I speak of like a metaphorically speaking of a house, they'll burn it down. You can't have it. If I can't have it, I'll burn the damn place down. That's the mentality here. And they are throwing the good of the country underfoot. To heck with the good of the country. The reason I'm spending so much time on this, and I'm not going to defend myself for doing so, except to say the reason I'm spending time on this, if you don't understand, at least in my view, the ideology behind what we're seeing and the specific points of motivation and motivators and actors, you're not going to understand really where we're at, why we're here. But more importantly, you're not going to understand the future events when they happen. And by not understanding that, the response, and I say response instead of reaction, your response, our response collectively, may be wrong. So, might be wrong. So, anyway, consider that. Consider that there is a team out there under the tutelage of Barack Hussein Obama, who has not left Washington, who are operating, and I've spoken about this before, in a manner in which to take down the presidency of Donald Trump. And from this, we have seen, from this ideology, we've seen the weaponization of many government institutions, from the IRS to the spy agencies, including the CIA and the FBI. Now, who's behind this? Well, leading the charge, obviously, would be a core group of political insiders, at least in the head of Bill Moyers, this the shadow government to take Donald Trump down. Political insiders who know how Washington works, along with mayors and state legislators and public servants and activists and organizers who know the needs of our municipalities and our counties and our states across the country. And working behind the scenes, this new mythical government would have its own executive cabinet, secretaries of state, treasury, education, health, and human services, countering that those people already in office. In other words, shadows of the people already appointed and working for the Donald Trump administration. Now, you might say, well, that's just talk. That's nonsense. Well, folks, this is the shadow government. Although this is the mental, I won't use that word, but, of Bill Moyers, this byproduct of Bill Moyers, I assert that many within the deep state have taken and run with this and have modeled what we're seeing after Bill Moyers' mythical, hypothetical establishment of a deep state. Whether they know it or not, that's what they're doing. So, obviously, Hillary never gave that speech, and maybe she never even read it and doesn't even know it exists. But when you look back, Moyer's fanciful proposal appears not merely foolish, but seditious. He claimed the proposal, by the way, was in the great tradition still carried on by parties currently out of power in Great Britain. And that may be so. I don't know. And again, this I'm citing some of this from Stephen Strang's book, Trump Aftershock, which will be available shortly. And I think it's a very, very good book, worthwhile read. But when you consider Obama now, outside of that, consider what Obama is doing. He's turning his attention back to community organizing, political activism. That's where he cut his teeth. I mean, that's where he got his start. And remember that there was a sit-down interview with Britain's Prince Harry for the BBC. Obama said that I'm really obsessed now with training the next generation of leaders to be able to make their own mark on the world. One way I've described it is that when you're in politics directly, you're a player on the field. And there's some elements of you that you'll never be able to duplicate. The excitement and the thrill, sometimes the agony even, that goes along with being on the field. And now I'm making that transition to some degree as a coach. And that has its own demands and its own responsibilities and its own impact. Okay. Well, you had Obama here in this exchange hinting more than once that if there was enough popular support as well, and I just go back and remember, I'm sure everyone will remember this, to mount a challenge to the 22nd Amendment, that's regarding term limits, by the way, that if he ran against President Donald Trump, he could win, which is okay, that kind of thinking is pretty substantial. It should be a cause for concern, especially in light of Rod Rosenstein's conversations and utterances, which he denies now, about invoking the 25th Amendment and so supposedly joking about wearing a wire. I urge you to look at the mindset that shapes the tactics of the individuals involved in what we would call the deep state, the pressures against Donald Trump. And when you consider what Obama said, even on CNN, it was an interview with David Axelrod, I believe, but this goes back to right after the election. I think it was in December of 2016. He said that he could have beaten Trump if he would had been able to run for a third term. So this was not just idle utterances at a party or something. He said this publicly. But anyway, just moving forward, Donald Trump gets into office, 2016, December, and all of a sudden he realizes that the weaponization of our intelligence committees, they were working against him. And this is what Sean Hannity talks about all the time. And this is what is being disclosed even today. And that disclosure of what is happening or what has happened against Donald Trump and what continues to happen, I submit to you, I contend that the weaponization and that wiretapping and the surveillance of Donald Trump is still going on. And there is still this body of rogue intelligence operatives and deep state operatives and permanent bureaucrats who are working to overthrow the Donald Trump presidency and exploited by the media, as I referenced in that New York Times article. As I referenced as well, or as I witnessed myself personally and Joe witnessed, it, on the ground level here during the Donald Trump rally. And during the Donald Trump rally, which was cited in that New York Times article, the media, which you can't discount the role of the media in this, and the people behind the media, which is extremely important here, the Soros and the well, I'll name them here in a second, but the people behind it, in order, what they're doing is they're saying, well, President Trump is the big divider. He is calling for this mob mentality against people such as Feinstein and Hillary Clinton, when in fact he's calling for law, the going back to adhering to the rule of law, as I mentioned earlier. He's not calling for lynching, he's calling for justice. But, now, what's the left doing? Just the opposite. But, see, the Alinsky tactics, you project onto your opponent what you are doing yourself. And that's, whether we're talking about Russia or this particular piece from the New York Times, that's what's taking place today. Now, how this applies, look, how this applies today. Look, Rod Rosenstein, who apparently somehow has, and look, you can read about Rod Rosenstein's refusal now today. Yesterday I was talking about he was supposed to testify before Congress. Now all of a sudden he's not going to give testimony. Yet he seems to be still on speaking terms with Donald Trump. Even Donald Trump has kind of given him a warm embrace. What's that all about? Some, according to at least the conservative treehouse, says, well, that's about leverage. It's all about leverage. Now, I'm not so sure about that. I don't know exactly, precisely what's going on there. I would suspect it's got more to do with the midterms and the optics surrounding the midterms than anything else, but we're going to keep our eyes on that. But I don't want to get too far afield on that. But getting back to what I was saying, when you look at the infrastructure that Rosenstein actually is a poster child for, you're seeing the infrastructure fighting against every part of the agenda of Donald Trump. You've got Brennan, who's working for CNN now. And by the way, Brennan is not getting enough credit for the dirty dossier, the Hillary Clinton dossier, his role in promoting that, both as a CIA director and in the media. Brennan avoided prosecution and apparently believed that lying to Congress by CIA personnel was an excusable offense, which may explain his unprovoked verbal attacks multiple on President Trump, but specifically when McCabe was fired 2 days before his anticipated retirement. And of course, everyone said, oh, that's just mean. Take that and compare it to what's happening today. Could Rosenstein be in that position? Whereas, hey, when I'm done with you, I'll fire you, I'll let you go, and everything, the world will see. I will expose everything. Just let me, I want to hurry up here because I promise I'm going to tie all this together. You've got, in fact, I'm going to cut to the chase right now. A person that I do follow is, the writings of, is Victor Davis Hanson. And he's written much about the political theater surrounding this Russian collusion investigation. And back in April of 2018, he predicted that the nation was about to witness a train wreck coming from one direction, he said, is Mueller. And then the other direction is the presidency of Donald Trump. Or actually, from the other direction comes the more accurately, I guess, would be the series of congressional investigations, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the IG, and others. Consider all of those who were exposing or are exposing the rot within the agency. As I mentioned, the crime scene that was contaminated by these deep state investigators. Now, Hanson asks, why are the two now about to collide? Well, you had the charges against Michael Flynn for lying to the FBI. Mueller emphasized that even the appearance of a false testimony is felonious behavior. Well, if that's so, then the Department of Justice will likely have to charge former Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe with perjury or related offenses. And it goes on from there. Well, okay, hang on. What are you seeing on social networking? What are you seeing on social networking? The memes out there. And they're memes that are being created and pushed by members of the deep state and the media themselves. Oh, well, you know, look, Hillary Clinton investigation into Benghazi, so many months, how many convictions? Zero. And the email investigation, how many months was that investigation? So many months and zero convictions or zero charges and so on and so forth. And then you get down to Mueller, and all of a sudden, there are numbers there. Yeah, it's been a year and a half, and look, there's convictions. But those are all processed crimes, have nothing to do with Donald Trump, and it's a false optic or false, it's completely false and erroneous. And it's actually, it's not just disingenuous, but it's not right. It's not correct. And it's creating a false image of what's going on, or false optics of what's going on. So, and Donald Trump also talks about the Mueller investigation, the reference to 13 angry Democrats in charge of Russia, the Russian witch hunt. Trump's tweet one time was, the 13 angry Democrats in charge of the Russian witch hunt are starting to find out that there is a court system in place that actually protects people from injustice. And of course, the number 13 in that tweet refers to the 13 out of 17 members of Mueller's team who are registered Democrats and fully on the side of Hillary Clinton. But I digress. So what you've got now, just to, again, as I like to bring this home, look at the injustices, the criminal contamination of the crime scene, as I like to say this, and look at the midterms coming up. There's only one thing that the Democrats fear most. That's the complete loss of power. Because with that loss of power comes an exposure to criminal charges. You may say, well, why weren't the criminal charges? You might ask, why wasn't there a better investigation right after Donald Trump got into office, like he promised? Well, because I submit that it takes a lot of time, not just to decontaminate the crime scene, but to get rid of those involved in the contamination of that crime scene, and then put your own people in place. And remember, the deep state is not only deep, but it's wide. So here's where we're at today. Boy, I hope this all kind of comes together. That is, comes together with respect to the unders, or how I explained it. You've got a very fearful democratic socialist left, fearful of losing power here in 26 days. If they do lose power, that will give President Trump the absolute best ability to expose the machinations of the deep state and the criminality of the deep state. I believe in everything I've seen, he has operated with extreme restraint so as not to throw our country into the optics to our enemies, foreign enemies especially, that we are a country so divided we couldn't protect ourselves. So he's got the best interests of our country at heart. Meanwhile, the Democratic Socialists left, they don't give a damn. They will destroy our country through division and even welcome the foreign influence, the foreign takeover, shall we say. Now, that might seem a little bit extreme, but that's where we're at. So I see President Donald Trump, based on everything so far, as being responsive as opposed to reactive against the deep state, and solidifying as he solidified two Supreme Court justices, as he is constantly now adding more judges to the circuit courts and to the federal courts all across the United States. He is setting up that very infrastructure in order to bring back law and order to the United States. So I end this by trying to give you hope, by trying to say that justice is coming, but it's not a TV show. It's not a 46-minute drama. It's not hour-long drama. Folks, thanks for listening. Hey, if you like what you heard, please share this on social networking. And thanks for your patience as I was preempted today. God bless.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report.
Tune in to the Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.